Chapter 2. Old Benjamin's Childhood. There was no way the son of the Buttons could be passed off as a conventional first family baby. Yet Mr. Button did everything he could to make his son look like one. He had his hair cut short and then dyed black, but gosh, how fake it looked, and let not even a hair remain on his face. The baby was now so smooth that he almost shone. He also asked a shocked tailor to dress him up in small boy clothes, which had to be made to order, obviously, but it was still impossible for him to hide the fact that his son was everything but a baby. Despite his natural, for his apparent age at least, stoop, Benjamin Button, that's how they had decided to call him, instead of the more appropriate but certainly more offensive Methuselah, was 1.72 meters tall. His clothes didn't help hiding this, and, unfortunately, it was clear that under those eyebrows, though shorter and dyed, were some pale, tired, and watery eyes. In fact, a single look at him was enough for the baby nurse, who was more a baby than him, and who had been employed to look after him, to leave the house, and in a state of great indignation, too. But Mr. Button was very determined and pursued his objective without hesitation. His firstborn was a baby, and he should behave and be treated as one. At first, he allowed him to have only warm milk. If Benjamin didn't like it, that would be his and his empty stomach's problem. But he was finally convinced to allow him to have bread and butter, and even oatmeal as a compromise. One day, he brought home a rattle, and, in giving it to Benjamin, he made it absolutely clear that he should play with it. The old man took it with a resigned expression, and, obediently, shook it every hour or so during the day. However, that the rattle bored him to death was no secret, and that was why he found other hobbies to entertain himself with when no one was around. One of these was found out one day by Mr. Button himself. He noticed that that week he had smoked more cigars than the week before, maybe more than ever. That was really odd. The mystery was then solved when, a few days later, entering the nursery by chance, he found the room full of some light blue smoke, and Benjamin, with a guilty expression on his face, trying to hide the end of a dark Havana. This, of course, required a severe spanking, but it was too much even for Mr. Button. So he simply warned his son that it would stop his growth. Nevertheless, Mr. Button's will could not be broken. He insisted on bringing home toy soldiers, toy trains, large funny animals made of cotton, and, just to make the illusion he was creating, for himself at least, perfect, he even anxiously asked the clerk at the toy store if the paint would come off the pink duck should the baby put it in his mouth. However, despite all his father's efforts, Benjamin refused to be interested. He would secretly go down the back stairs and return to the nursery with a volume of the Encyclopaedia Britannica, which he would carefully read all afternoon while his cotton cows and Noah's Ark toys lay, totally forgotten about, on the floor. Mr. Button's efforts really could do nothing against such stubbornness. Benjamin's story created a huge sensation in Baltimore at first, but who knows what would have happened to the Buttons after that first excitement. Luckily, no one can tell, since the outbreak of the Civil War drew all the city's attention to other things. A few people, those who are polite no matter what, tried hard to find something nice to tell the parents about the baby, and finally came up with a fantastic idea. The baby looked like his grandfather. And this, considering the usual appearance of men of 70, couldn't be denied. As you can imagine, Benjamin's parents were not very happy to hear that. And as for his grandfather, well, he felt deeply offended. When Benjamin left the hospital, he took life as it came. His parents arranged for many little boys to visit and play with him, and he spent his whole afternoon trying to show interest in tops, marbles, and slingshots, while altogether trying to forget about his stiff joints. He even broke a kitchen window with a stone by chance. This accident made Mr. Button so secretly happy that Benjamin decided to break something every day. It was what they expected him to do, after all. And by nature, he aimed to please others. After his grandfather recovered from the initial dislike he had felt toward him, he and Benjamin got into the habit of spending a lot of time together, and with great pleasure too. They would sit for hours together and talk about the slow events of the day without getting bored, just like two best friends, even though they were so different in age and experience. Benjamin felt more comfortable in his grandfather's presence than in his parents'. Mr. and Mrs. Button were rather in awe of him, and, despite the authority they legally had over him, they often called him Mr. Being born with an old mind and body was as big a mystery for Benjamin as for anyone else. He tried to look for an explanation in medical journals, but found no similar cases. Pushed by his father, no surprise here, he did try to play some of the softer games with other boys, but, for example, football was too much of a risk. He worried that his old bones could break and never heal again. When he was 5, he went to kindergarten, that magic place where he was introduced to the art of gluing pieces of green paper on orange paper, creating colouring maps, and making indestructible paper necklaces all day long. Benjamin often fell asleep during those complex procedures, and so often that his young teacher was both angry and frightened every time it happened. To his joy, she complained about it, and he was taken out of school. The Buttons told their friends that they felt Benjamin was too young for it. Years passed, and by the time Benjamin was 12 years old, his parents had got used to him. The force of habit works miracles sometimes. They no longer saw their son as different from any other child, except when some curious details reminded them of the fact. But one day, a few weeks after his 12th birthday, Benjamin made, or at least he thought he made, an amazing discovery. He couldn't believe his eyes. Was it just fantasy? Or, looking at himself in the mirror, his hair under the dye was darker than before? Now, it seemed grey, not white anymore. Also, was it true that his face had fewer wrinkles? And was his skin healthier and firmer, with even a touch of colour? He could not tell for sure. He only knew that he no longer had a stoop, and that his physical condition had improved since the early days of his life.
"Can it be that?"
he thought, or rather, hardly dared to think. He went to his father and said, confidently,
"I am grown. I want to put on long trousers now."
Mr. Button was not so sure about this suggestion.
"Well,"
he said finally,
"I don't know. 14 is a suitable age for putting on long trousers, and you are only 12. But you have to admit,"
protested Benjamin,
"that I'm big for my age."
His father pretended to deeply reflect about this consideration.
"Oh, I'm not so sure of that,"
he said.
"I was as big as you when I was 12.
This was obviously false. It was all part of Roger Button's self-illusion to believe in his son's normality. Finally, an agreement was reached. Benjamin would continue to dye his hair black, try to play with boys his age more, and avoid wearing his glasses and carrying his cane in the streets. In exchange for these concessions, he was allowed to wear his first pair of long trousers. At last. There is not much to say about Benjamin's life until his 21st birthday. They were years of normal ungrowth. When he was 18, he walked as straight as a man of 50. His walk was firm, his voice was stronger, and had become a healthy baritone, and more hair had grown on his head. It was dark grey now. So it was time for Benjamin to go to college. His father sent him up to Connecticut to take the entrance test for Yale, and guess what? He passed it and became a freshman. On his third day as a freshman, Benjamin was informed that Mr. Hart, the college registrar, wanted him to go to his office to arrange his future schedule. After a quick look at the mirror, Benjamin decided that his hair needed some more brown dye. However, his anxious and thorough search in the drawers produced no result. No dye bottle could be found. Then he remembered. He had emptied it the day before and thrown it away. What a mess. His appointment was in 5 minutes. What should he do now? To go or not to go? That was quite a dilemma. He had no choice. He had to go as he was. And that he did. As he entered the office, Mr. Hart said politely, "Good morning. I suppose you've come to have some information about your son."
"Well, actually, my surname is Button, but..."
began Benjamin, but Mr. Hart stopped him. "I'm very glad to meet you, Mr. Button. I'm waiting for your son. He should be here any minute now."
"That's me,"
burst out Benjamin.
"I'm a freshman."
"What?"
"I'm a freshman."
"Surely you're joking."
"Not at all."
The registrar threw Benjamin a look of confusion and carefully took in his hands a piece of paper that was on his desk. "Hmm. This document clearly says that Mr. Benjamin Button's age is 18.
"Because that's my age,"
said Benjamin, flushing slightly. The registrar examined him with uncertainty. "Now, surely, Mr. Button, you don't expect me to believe that." All Benjamin could do was smile, unsure, and repeat,
"I am 18.
At that point, the registrar was more than angry. He was furious. He pointed to the door and said, "Get out! Get out of college and get out of town! You are a dangerous lunatic!"
"I'm 18.
Mr. Hart opened the door. "The idea!" he shouted. "A man of your age trying to enter here as a freshman! 18 years old, are you? Well, I'll give you 18 minutes to get out of town." Benjamin walked with dignity out of the room, and the 5 or 6 students waiting in the hall started staring at him curiously. After a few steps, he turned around, and looking at the furious registrar in the eye, he was still there in the doorway, repeated firmly,
"I am 18 years old."
Benjamin finally left, but soon, more and more quiet, embarrassed laughs coming from the students followed him. But that was not enough. He was not allowed to escape so easily. The closer he got to the train station on his sad walk back home, the more people started following him. A small group at first, then a larger one. Finally, a large mass of students. Word had spread that some old lunatic had passed the entrance test for Yale and was trying to pass himself off as an 18-year-old, and now everyone wanted to see him with their own eyes. The college was hit by a wave of excitement. Students ran out of classes with no hats on. The football team stopped training and joined the crowd. And even the professors' wives, with messy clothes and excessive enthusiasm, ran shouting after the procession and added their voices to the continuous comments aimed at hurting Benjamin Button's feelings.
He must be the Wandering Jew.
He should go to prep school at his age.
Look at the baby genius.
He thought this was the old men's home.
Go up to Harvard.
Benjamin walked faster and faster, and soon he was running. He would show them. He would go to Harvard, and then they would regret their mean comments. Safely on board the train for Baltimore, he put his head from the window.
You'll regret this,
he shouted. The students laughed. It was the biggest mistake that Yale College had ever made.